It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Thank you so much for listening. This portion of the show brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States. Find them online at windowworldst.louis.com. Josh and Tim are here with me in the studio, and now our news director, Colin Jeffrey, sheds that garb to put on the cape and tights of his superhero alter ego, Showbiz Boy, for our weekly Showbiz segment. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just fine. Let's just jump right into the issue in Showbiz now. Before we get to the movies of this week, let's jump into the continuing saga of the so-called boycott of the Olympics. I mentioned a few days ago on the show that Jada
Pinkett...
I'm sorry, the Oscars. Did I say the Olympics?
Yes, you did. It threw me for a real... I was like,
you know why?
I'm not prepared.
Well,
to
no. You know what? I didn't screw up because Jada Pinkett Smith has just issued a press release. I have it right here saying that she is not going to attend the 2016 Olympics in Rio because there are not enough members of her family being invited to participate in the Olympics. I have it right here directly from... But she's also not going to the Oscars. So she's not going out a lot this year, I guess, is the message we're learning.
Neither is Will. He said he's not going.
Now, I mentioned when you and I were talking on Tuesday on this show, I mentioned it's really easy to say you're not going to the Oscars when you probably weren't going to the Oscars anyway because nobody in your family was nominated.
Right.
But then I mentioned this yesterday to Mike Evans, and he said, no, a lot of members of the Academy go anyway.
Yeah, there's 7,000 members of the Academy, so they got to fill the theater somehow.
Yeah, but the big stars who aren't nominated, they don't go. At least we don't see them on camera.
No, and it's probably because they don't make a lot of jokes about them. You know, they don't mention them a lot, and there's no reason to shoot, you know, some of these people.
They may go to the Vanity Fair party or the other, you know, the big parties that go on after that, but they don't actually go to the Oscars themselves. So will the Oscars miss the Smiths and Michael Moore and Spike Lee?
No.
They weren't going to be there.
They weren't going to be there, and even if they were, they wouldn't have been on camera.
Okay, but the reason I bring it up today is because Cheryl Boone Hill, is that the name of the woman who's the head of the Academy?
Because Annette Bening's the head of the actors' side, Catherine Bigelow's the head of the directors. There's several, the Academy's broken up into small groups, but yeah, okay. I think you have the name of the overall president.
She says today that she issued a press release saying they are going to take new measures to try to expand the membership of the Academy to include more minorities.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Your guess is as good as mine. Getting into the Academy is not an easy thing. It shouldn't be. I mean, it shouldn't be. There's 7,000 people. Once you're in for life. You don't have to be active anymore, okay. Which is probably a change they should make. If you're not active, you don't get to vote anymore. Like, that's foolish.
Yeah, I would say if you haven't made a movie in 10 or 15 years, you don't get to vote.
They're doing it with the baseball writers for the Hall of Fame. If you're not active anymore, you don't get to vote. Otherwise, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are never going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
So that's part of it. The second part is to get, you have to come into a section of the Academy. So if you're an actor, I think that's the largest. It's like 1,200 members. You have to be nominated, vouched for by someone who's in the Academy, and then they vote on whether or not to accept you into the Academy of Motion Picture Sciences.
Okay.
So that's how it works. So they're just saying they're going to place an emphasis on increasing diversity, membership of minorities and women.
There's going to be affirmative action inside the movie Academy.
Yes, which we need to, isn't necessarily like a horrible thing in the Academy itself, because part of their job, they have the awards, and that's part of it. But what they spend more time doing is having programs. You see it every year. They've got programs where they go out and reach out to young filmmakers. They educate people. They speak at colleges. They do all of these other things, and that's not a bad thing to encourage diversity of voices to make movies.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that they just existed for the Academy Awards.
I think a lot of people do. They have that little montage that's 5 minutes, and they invite, you know, three or five future filmmakers up.
I never pay attention to that.
You don't?
It's like when they bring the accountants at. Yawn.
PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Okay, fine.
That's a great name for an accounting firm.
All right, fine. But I don't pay attention to that part either.
Yeah. But that's what they do. So it's got sort of a bad look on the front. It seems as if we're giving into this pressure. But really, when you look behind it, it's probably not a bad thing, because I don't think anyone would argue that having more movies from more perspectives, more diverse perspectives, is a bad thing.
Yep.
And so maybe that will be good. It has this sort of ugly timing.
Is it a question of we need more movies made by those filmmakers, or that the movies made by those filmmakers need to be recognized? Because this year you had Creed and Chirac and Beasts of No Nation.
This accomplishes all of that. What I'm astounded is that they say our goal is to have this completed by 2020. Why is it taking you four years? I mean, are there people out there that are that you could just okay, they're in tomorrow. What's the ideal demographic? Are they going to try and maintain a quota? I mean, this is really. How will they know when they've arrived? Is it supposed to mirror the U.S. population? Is it supposed to mirror the population in movies? I don't know.
The goal is just a general one. We need to get more black people in here. We need to get more women in here.
Yeah. All minorities, Asian, they're horribly underrepresented. Native Americans, we spoke about, they have zero wins in the history.
What about Shasheen Littlefeather?
She was playing a Native American.
She was not. Yeah, I know, the one who went up for Marlon Brando.
Yes,
I'm kidding about her.
So I mean, I think it's bad optics. You know, it doesn't look good because it looks like the Academy is giving in or something.
Okay, now on that right there on the optics question, don't you think that actors who are well known when asked about this should say, "I don't have any comment on that," because there's the opportunity to say the wrong thing, as happened today, where Charlotte Rampling, who's nominated for a movie coming out next week in St. Louis called 45 Years, and Michael Caine, who's made 150 different movies, some of them great, some of them not so great, but they built houses for him. They both said things that were a little bit on the side of you shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. Yes, they did.
Charlotte Rampling actually said that if we had quotas, it would be racist against white people.
Yes.
By the way, are they still voting?
They're in it. Yeah, they're in forever.
No. What I mean is, are the people who are voting for the category that she's up for, are they still? So in other words, I'm asking if that quote from her is going to come back to bite her and completely deaden any chance of her winning in her category.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the deadline.
I bet they still are.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because I guess they just found... I don't know the deadline. That's a good question.
It can't be good, is my point.
No, it's not going to help.
And Michael Caine said essentially, well, I think black actors just need to be more patient.
Yeah, not great either.
Whatever you tell a minority, you know what? Just hang on. We'll get to you. Yeah. Stand over there.
Just...
be patient. Change is coming.
Yeah, it's not... doesn't ring great. And it's a shame to see Michael Caine dragged down.
Yeah.
With something like this, because that's a guy.
He's also nominated this year, isn't he, for Youth?
Yeah, and he...
Okay, then see, right there, again, that's one of those where your publicist should have gone to you ahead of time and said, okay, we set up this interview with you, you're going to get asked this question, do not answer it.
Yes, and the more amazing part of his interview that is getting overlooked, and I read his interview quickly, I didn't see if he had the drinking problem or his wife did, but he said he credits his wife for either helping him or herself.
Oh, no, he had a serious drinking problem.
Yes, he was drinking a bottle of vodka a day.
Yeah, I know. She saved his life.
He mentioned that again in the interview.
Yeah.
I was unaware it was a bottle of vodka a day.
Yeah.
That is not a small amount of liquor a day.
Yeah, no, he and Peter O'Toole and Richard Burton and a lot of those hard-drinking English, Scottish, and Welsh actors used to all hang around together. Anthony Hopkins was one of those, and they could put it away like they had a hollow leg. I mean, it was unbelievable. But yeah. He had a serious problem. He's talked about it before. It was in his autobiography. Mm-hmm. Then the other actor I want to ask you about is Mark Ruffalo, who a few days ago was asked, you know, are you going to boycott the Academy Awards? And he said, well, I'm weighing it. I think somebody got to Mark Ruffalo because yesterday he tweeted, just to clear up any confusion, I will be going to the Oscars in support of the victims of clergy sexual abuse and good journalism.
There you go.
Because he's nominated for Spotlight, which I think should win for Best Picture. He has to be there.
And that would have made a great first answer.
Yes.
That should have been in his back pocket.
Should have been the only answer.
If anyone asks you, this is the answer.
Yeah, don't say, I'm weighing it. You could actually see the publicist facepalming in the audio of that clip.
It's not as if they... I don't understand why they think they're not going to get interviewed. Someone is...
They're being interviewed because they're nominated. They should know they're going to be interviewed.
I will offer my services as a publicist for a fraction of your current publicist.
Yeah.
It's... Yeah,
of course, you also have to get your client to understand and go along. But...
Yeah.
I'm weighing it. Yeah. All right, enough about that. Let's get to the movies for this week. There are a few of them opening up. I'm going to go over a couple that I know you did not see.
Yes.
Because you told me we were not going to go, and I told you I wasn't going to go see Dirty Grandpa.
Yes.
With Zac Efron and Robert De Niro. We talked Tuesday about what a waste Robert De Niro's career becomes when he does a Zac Efron movie.
Yeah.
Which is just getting horrible reviews. We didn't see it, so we can't add to that, but horrible. There's also a movie out in St. Louis this weekend called The Boy. Tell me if this sounds like a familiar plot to you. An American nanny is shocked that her new English family's boy is actually a life-sized doll. She violates a list of rules for how you're supposed to treat the boy, and then disturbing events make her believe that the doll is really alive.
Yes. Never a good sign when they don't screen a movie.
Isn't this essentially like the Chucky movies?
Yeah, maybe this is a bit more endearing because it's a lovely old couple who says, oh, please watch our boy. And I don't.
Also,
it's a January movie.
Also, the nanny violates a list of strict rules. Have you not seen Gremlins? Do not get the boy wet. Do not feed him after midnight. How many times do I have to tell you? It's written down on the refrigerator.
Yep. My wife saw that one as too young. She said her mom let her see it too young.
Gremlins?
Gremlins. Her mom, because it looks, I mean,
I know.
Oh, there's these cute little...
Right. The Mowgli looks very, very cute.
What is it? Gizmo? Isn't that his name?
Yeah.
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 And yes, not.
And then there's another one. Again, you know, when Colin says January movies, he says that for a reason, because we've been doing this for a while now. January and the first half of February are traditionally the dumping ground for movies that are so bad we can't put them in August.
Yeah, it's really, really bad
movie. Okay, now before we get into the other movies, what is it about this time of the year? Is that nobody's going to the movies this year, so you don't bother holding on to anything worthwhile?
Well, there's not award season is done.
Yeah.
So great movies typically aren't released in January because everyone will have forgotten about them by the time voting comes around.
Okay, but there are some movies that are never going to be up for Academy Awards.
Yeah, so it's cheap to release them. There's not a lot of competition. There's no big.
But where are the good January movies? Why is nobody coming out with something?
Well, we had American Sniper last year that had a wide release in January.
Oh,
we
that's
have,
true.
We have holiday holdovers still. I mean, we've got Revenant in theaters here, Concussion, Star Wars. We have holdovers from the holidays.
Right.
And those are pretty decent movies around the holidays.
Do you think part of that is that so many good movies are released in December that are still in movies in January, that they're taking up screens and taking up audience, and so
yeah.
The studios go, ah, why bother?
Yeah, you don't have to. It's just there's not a lot of competition. You can put out something that would get laughed out of theaters in June, July, or August. You can drop it here, and it'll make a few million bucks. Case in point, Norm of the North from last week. That is awful. It is my early front runner for worst movie of the year.
It did well at the box office?
$4 million. It could not have cost. Rob Schneider is a big talent in that. It could not have cost much more than...
You want to get Rob Schneider for a movie? Lend me $20.
Exactly. He did a straight-to-DVD movie a few years back called Big Stan, in which he played a recently released convict or something. It was awful.
But they make enough money so that people keep calling him. Nobody has said, that Rob Schneider card, tear that up and throw that away. Delete that contact from my computer.
I think Adam Sandler has guaranteed that he will forever have a job. It's kind of like Clint Howard. His brother kept putting him in movies for so long that he now has a legitimate career.
The other movie we didn't see this week is called Mojave. This was not screened for critics either. Mm-hmm. This is about a guy who is a successful artist who's suicidal and goes into the desert and finds a guy who's just like him but is a homicidal drifter.
Okay.
That description right there tells me there's no chance I'm going to see this movie, plus the fact that among its cast is Oscar Isaac.
Oh, I love him.
I know you do. I hate him. I haven't seen a single movie with him in it that I liked.
A Most Violent Year?
Didn't like it.
Oh, well, then never mind.
Inside Llewyn Davis? Terrible. But, of course, he's famous now, and he's in the biggest movie of all time, Star Wars: A Force Awakens.
Yeah, it's closing in on $2 billion. It may get there.
Yeah. But he's not responsible. Nobody said, oh, I'm going to see that new Oscar Isaac space movie.
No.
Nobody says
no
that.
No one says that. You're
no
right.
One says that. All right, so there's, of the four movies opening in St. Louis this weekend, you've only seen one of them. I've seen none. So what's the one you saw?
I saw The Fifth Wave. This is another foray into the young adult novel post-apocalyptic genre. So I've already lost you.
Mm-hmm.
Post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, I'm gone.
This is sort of post-apocalypse light because it starts, first of all, it starts Chloe Grace Moritz, who's from the Kick-Ass movies. She's a young actress. I like her. I think she's a very good actress.
Okay.
And I think she was especially funny in those Kick-Ass movies that were filthy and funny and raunchy. And yes,
okay,
they did that right. In this, she plays a young teenager, Cassie Sullivan, in Ohio. So there you go. Takes place in Ohio, middle of America, when an alien invasion begins. An object shows up in the sky. And this is where I thought, okay, this might sort of be an intriguing plot device. Is if you have a low budget film for an alien invasion movie, think something like Signs. You know, that had $70 million, but a lot of that went to actors. They did an alien invasion from the point of view of a home. So they didn't have to show widespread destruction. They could just show like news clips and then everything that was happening in the house. But it added a sort of, it was intimate and tense because of that. You're rooting for this one family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this, what they decide to do, as opposed to showing the alien invasion, they say that the aliens attack in a series of waves. The first wave is an electromagnetic pulse that stops all electronics in the world. Planes crash from the sky. Then they create a series of tsunamis in the second wave that wipe out the coastal regions. Then the third wave is a plague that kills a bunch of people. And then the aliens finally descend and start to, I don't know, snipe survivors.
All right, Dan's not here, so I'll ask, is this a true story?
Sadly, no. The aliens called the Others. Very creative name there.
Really?
Yes. This is this level of like sophistication you get from this movie.
Wow.
It's January.
Who wrote this? Jenkins?
Yes, Jenkins wrote it with help.
Really, Jenkins? You couldn't come up with a name for the aliens? All you had was the Others?
And
that was it?
Yeah.
I was going to work on that, but I was hungry and I went to get lunch. What do you want from me? It's the Others. Leave me alone. I'm only getting $50 for this. You could have gotten Rob Schneider to write the script. Go ahead.
So the fourth wave is they start to pick off survivors, and the fifth wave is imminent, hence the title. And it's going to be something big, but we don't know what.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Cassie is a young teenager, and it sets a bleak tone up front because we see her early in the movie kill someone, like accidentally sort of forced to kill another human, because she's scavenging for, I'm not even, like, feminine hygiene products. Like,
okay.
It's crazy.
Okay.
And you think, oh, wow, this is going to be dark. And then it takes a left turn. They introduce, you know, a hunky guy that she falls in love with, and it gets very bland.
And the two of them, alone, fight off the alien invasion.
Well, no, there's actually kind of a good, all the kids are sort of conscripted to fight in an army because, I don't know, sure, all the kids are conscripted to fight in an army to defeat the alien invaders, the Others, and she gets separated from her brother and her boyfriend. And
you know how they're able to get the kids to do it? Because the electromagnetic pulse knocked out their phones and they can't text each other anymore.
No, they still walk around with just dead devices, just just staring at them at dinner with their families.
My thumbs are numb. I don't know what to do.
it falls flat on its face. It hits kind of one note, and this is based on a series of books, of course, because why would we in Hollywood not take three young adult books and turn them into four movies?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they say it's going to be a trilogy at this point, but we'll see. If it makes a lot of money,
but it's coming out in January, which implies it's not going to make a lot of money. Or do you think it will hit the box office?
Well, this is the one they could have said, oh, we can sneak this in here. It's not a June or July movie, but we can maybe introduce this in between, you know. I mean, Hunger Games is done now. We've got another Divergent movie coming out this summer. So maybe we can sneak it in here and get people. Well, it was easy to find people who'd read the Hunger Games, easy to find people who'd read the Divergent book. So I took to Facebook and found a friend who had read these books. And they said they're actually like really dark. They're layered books and not necessarily like a teenage, always teenage friendly series of books.
Mm-hmm.
And they just gutted that, it sounds like, for this movie.
Okay, yes, Josh?
Has there ever been a series, like, you came out with a movie like this, and they say, oh, it's going to be a trilogy, and then it goes to the screens, and then it just bombs at the box office, and it's never heard from again? Has that ever happened?
Well,
like with The Maze Runner, do we really need more of those?
Well, I don't know about trilogies. Colin can jump on that in just a second, but I would tell you there have been movies just in the last year that when you see them or even hear about them, you know it's supposed to be the launch of a new franchise. For example, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. That was supposed to be the beginning of a Man from U.N.C.L.E. series that was going to begin, not TV series, but series of movies. It bombed at the box office, and now there will not be a Man from U.N.C.L.E. 2. I'll tell you another one, which was on my list of the worst movies of last year. Hitman, Agent 47, which they had tried to do in Hollywood in 2007. It bombed. They tried it again in 2015, thinking, well, we're going to turn this into a big-time franchise thing. It bombed. There will never be another Hitman Agent 47 movie, right?
I hope not. They have tried to do Hitman multiple times now, and it has failed.
Okay, do you know of things that were announced ahead of time as being franchise, future franchise movies?
Well, Gremlins, they always intended to do more. That sort of fell off.
Well, you know, when they made Back to the Future, they made Back to the Future 1 and 2 at the same time. They knew they were going to come out with a sequel to that.
They made 2 and 3.
No, they made 1 and 2 at the same time. And then the third one was made later.
Why'd they have a new...
What's her name? Jennifer?
New Jennifer.
What about that that one with Daniel Craig? With the Golden Compass or something?
Yeah, the Wind... You've got it right there. The Golden Compass.
Did they ever finish that trilogy? I mean, there's a lot of these things that come out that aren't necessarily geared towards our audience. But I would never imagine that the Golden Compass deserves...
Oh, there's one even from this past year that I can't think of. I just can't come.
Well, you know, the classic example is anytime you're putting together an event, forget about movies. If you're putting together an event, a charity event, let's say, never call it the first annual.
Yeah. No.
Put on the event, see how it goes, and then the next year can be the second annual. Because you don't know if it's going to be annual. It might bomb. You might lose money on it. People might hate it. Same thing with movies. Don't announce that you're starting. We're going to make a new series of franchise movies based on this, The Fifth Wave. Well, it's going to bomb at the box office, I assume. Is it going to bomb?
It's not going to do great, but they had a low budget because they don't show any big fight scenes through the entire thing. I was like, this is really smart on their part. If they've got a low budget, don't make it an alien invasion like Independence Day where you have to blow up the world. Make it an alien invasion where they do these small things. And I'm like, oh, this is a clever way to get around a small budget. But then they never brought the goods.
By the way, did I read that they're making a remake of Independence Day?
Or a sequel.
A sequel to Independence Day.
Without Will Smith. No Will Smith.
By the way,
Channing Tatum.
Hold on just a second. I just got another text here from Jada Pinkett Smith, who is going to boycott the remake of Independence Day. Spike Lee also says he will not go see it, and Michael Moore says, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, back to you, Colin.
Okay, so The Giver, they were thinking they may do...
By the way, since when is this... the sound of a text.
I don't know. There's all sorts of text messages.
Why would I say this came in as a text when I'm rattling the paper to make it seem like it's a real piece of email? Idiot.
Hot off the press.
The Giver from, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, with Jeff Bridges, the adaptation of the novel. They were going to do more than one of those. They canceled that because it failed. And then a movie from 2013, The Mortal Instruments, that was another young... It made $9.3 million, and so they said, that's not going to happen. And now, I believe, it is a small screen show. Like, they made it into a show for that Freeform network or whatever.
Okay, what do you give The Fifth Wave on a scale of 10?
I give it, like, a reluctant 3.5. A 3. 3. It's just a 3. It's okay. 3. And that's... No, don't go see it.
Okay.
Like, it's just...
Is Ride Along 2 going to be the winner this weekend?
Why not?
I don't know. I mean, I'm asking you.
Yeah, no, I say why not? Revenant's going to continue to do well because it's getting more and more Oscar buzz, and everyone wants to see what appears to be the inevitable Oscar win for Leonardo DiCaprio, so why not?
That and Star Wars?
Yeah, Star Wars is still chugging along.
Yeah.
How many times have you seen it, Paul?
Just the once.
Just the once?
How about you?
I'm stuck at 3.
Stuck at 3. You think Tina Fey is going to show up on Saturday Night Live tomorrow night now that Sarah Palin's back in the news?
Oh, wouldn't that be great? So. I hope it's one of those unannounced cameos.
Well, I just ruined it for you then. I apologize.
Oh, she's going to show up?
No, I don't know.
Oh.
I'm just guessing that she'll be there with Donald Trump, played by Daryl Hammond. And speaking of TV, you I know are excited for the return of The X-Files.
Yes.
Which is on Fox Sunday night and Monday night, you told me.
Yes. Did we pull the same story here? About her salary?
Yes. That Gillian Anderson who was either Mulder or Scully. I never watched the show, so I don't know. She was Scully. She says that when she was hired, she was actually hired to be almost David Duchovny's sidekick on the show and was instructed never to walk ahead of him or next to him, to always walk behind him at the beginning of the show. And then after they'd been doing it for a while, she kind of stopped doing that and walked next to him. And she realized she's got a character who's strong and just as strong as he was. Then she found out that he was getting twice as much money as her. And she was upset about that, and she forced the studio to pay them equally for the last few years of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you fast forward to 2016. Here's the X-Files reboot coming with David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson, and she finds out that when they wanted to hire them both back to do this, they were going to pay her half as much as David Duchovny again.
That is just... If that hasn't been... The biggest story of sort of entertainment is the pay gap between actors and actresses. Or
especially after the Sony leak, we found out, you know, that Jennifer Lawrence got paid so much less than Bradley Cooper and the others in Silver Linings Playbook. Big time. Something I think you're going to hear more about going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then do you have anything else that you wanted to get to?
No, tonight? I was going to mention that Gillian Anderson.
Okay. Then the last thing I have to mention to you is that Samuel L. Jackson is no longer the number one box office star of all time. He was number one on the list because mostly of his work in movies like The Avengers, etc. 4.6
Star Wars,
right. $4.6 billion, but now that the new Star Wars is out and Harrison Ford is in that, and it's the biggest movie of all time, Harrison Ford has surpassed him with $4.8 billion made by movies he's appeared in. And I started looking down the list here, and every one of the people who's in the top 10 has been in either a superhero movie or some kind of big special effects movie, except for Eddie Murphy, whose biggest movie was Shrek 2.
Oh, my God.
He didn't do any superhero movies. He didn't do any big special effects movies. But he did all his movies in the 80s that did really well. But it's Shrek 2 that was his biggest movie. Made $441 million.
He did a lot of comedies, too. I mean, those aren't blockbusters. Those aren't earning huge, huge money.
I know. But you look at the top 10. Tom Hanks, he's in there because of the Toy Story movies, not because of the dramas he's done. Morgan Freeman is in there because he was in Dark Knight. Tom Cruise, well, he's done lots of special effects movies, but his biggest movie of all time, do you know what it is?
Oh, Tom Cruise, I'd have to assume it's the most recent Mission Impossible.
No, it's War of the Worlds.
Oh, that's right.
I'm shocked at that. $234 million.
There's an alien invasion movie with a huge budget.
Yep.
That should have gone the other way.
Robert Downey Jr. is in there for all the Iron Man and Avengers movies. Johnny Depp is in there for Pirates of the Caribbean. His biggest one is Dead Man's Chest. That's one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Michael Caine, who we were just talking about, he's in there because he was in The Dark Knight.
And 800 other movies.
Gary Oldman is in there because of The Dark Knight. Number 11 on the list. This one really surprised me. I never thought of Robin Williams as a huge box office draw.
He was just in a lot of movies, though.
He was in a lot of movies. You know what his biggest movie was? He didn't even star in it. No, not Hook. Night at the Museum, the Ben Stiller movie, made $250 million.
See, Robin Williams, Gary Oldman, these are all bit players who happen to be in these, in these movies.
Well, I mean, the number 13 is Stellan Skarsgård, who's in the Avengers movies.
Yeah.
But he's not one of those things. If you ask somebody to name me the biggest box office movie in the world, you go through 100 people, none of them is going to say Stellan Skarsgård.
Wow.
Anthony Daniels, who's C-3PO, because he's been in all these Star Wars movies, he's on the list. You know who the number one woman on the list is? She's in 17th place all time. The number one box office woman of all time.
I don't know.
Cameron Diaz.
Oh, wow.
Why? Shrek 2.
Shrek 2.
Shrek 2, which made $441 million. Pretty amazing. All right, Colin, we'll see you at the top of the hour for the news.
Paul.
Thank you very much. Colin Jeffrey, Showbiz Boy. What's your email address if people have showbiz questions for you?
Showbizboy550@gmail.com.
There you go. Well,
you got an email.
I've had it for a while.
I didn't think you liked that name.
He doesn't
like it when I call him that in the hallway.
Well, perhaps only certain people are allowed to call him Showbiz Boy.
Yes.
That would be me and everyone but you.
And there's an exclusive academy, and there's concerns that the diversity might not be high enough.
Yeah, we are taking measures to start including you in the people who can call Colin Showbiz Boy list.
What's that going to take effect in 2020?
Yes. I'm talking to Cheryl Boone Isaacs about the new measures right now. I'm Paul Harris. That's our Showbiz segment for this week on the Big 550 KTRS.